This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, before we get into today's episode, just a quick reminder that if you have someone that is currently pregnant and thinking about all the things that are ahead of them, from postpartum planning to breastfeeding and returning to paid work to how on earth to navigate the childcare system and what they need to do now, we have just the guides for them. You can shop our Ready or Not go-to guides, Postpartum and Return to Work Planning, Breastfeeding and Returning to Work, and Childcare 101 for $69 as a bundle or $29 individually. They're packed full of information created with experts, and I personally think they're brilliant. You can shop them now in our show notes or readyornot.au.
Just a quick little update for the top of this episode. It is 9:43 p.m. on a Tuesday night. This episode goes live, as you may know by now, every Wednesday morning. Now, normally I'm organised. Normally I schedule these in advance. But in a few weeks, we had a big house move. We have two kids. My husband and I basically worked full time on that move for an entire week, and it was a huge job. That Saturday, we had one of our best friends' weddings. The Sunday, we left to go to Byron Bay for another one of our best friends' weddings. Then we parented in a different location, aka holidayed, and it was the best time ever. But on top of that, we had a wedding to attend and parties around that because it was a destination wedding. And long story short, I've left my microphone somewhere. I don't even know where, because I'll be honest, I've had a bit more fun the last two weekends than I normally do. I sound like I have smoked. I have never smoked in my life. I've just done too much talking, too much fun having. And while we had so much beautiful downtime on this holiday, it was still with our kids, so it wasn't exactly relaxing. And so in amongst all this, normally the really good packer in me and organizer in me has just completely forgot about my freaking microphone when moving from one accommodation to another. We think we know where I've left it, but I didn't realise until we walked in the door from this holiday tonight. So we walked in the door at about 6:30 p.m. I realised about 7 p.m, putting the kids to bed, looked for my spare podcast microphone. That lived in the same spot in the last house for over a year. But do you think I could find it? No. So I put up a poll on Instagram. Do I record the intro of this episode? So the only thing I had left to do, which was so disorganised, so last minute. Normally I do these in advance, but I just didn't have enough time with what was going on. So the poll said, do I record with shitty phone audio, which makes me feel like I'm not giving today's guest the sort of, I guess, credit she deserves or the quality she deserves? And do I make it relatable by having this conversation? So that was option one. Or do I hold back this episode for a week and wait till I've got my microphone again? Or hopefully not, but maybe. Purchase another bloody microphone. Anyway, you all picked, and I can't even speak, and I'm not going to edit this because I just want to show the frazzled mind that I often have that I'm sure you do too. You picked option A, which is just be relatable, share the shitty audio, share my croaky voice, and so we're going to get into it. My crap intro and audio has nothing to do with the quality of today's guest. I really loved this chat. I hope you do too. See you back here next week with way better audio. And thank you for bearing with me. When I was trying to conceive for the first time, and basically for the 10 years leading up to it too, the constant question swirling around my brain was how. How do mothers and primary caregivers be the mum that they want to be while pursuing the career of their dreams too? I wanted to know how mums did it on a practical, granular level. Give me times, give me dates, give me formulas. And no, not the milk kind, but while we're at it, how the heck do I get her to take a bottle of that too? And it's not all that surprising to me now that a lot of the conversations that have come out of this podcast have focused more on how we feel about motherhood, about career, about finding the balance. But I often think about that pregnant version of me and the sort of content she was looking for. And today's episode really hits that mark for me. Pardon the pun. DataMark founder Rosie Collins is incredibly passionate about building a life by design. And while she admits that might sound a bit corny, it's far from it. She's purposeful and deliberate with every decision she makes in business and in motherhood. And our conversation had me pondering, how often do I really stop and think about how I approach my work and my life? Here, we talk about the toolkit she's developed that helps her navigate a successful business alongside motherhood, how she started Deja Mark, including learning to do everything in the business herself before growing her team, and how she moved from feeling scared about how she would navigate it all to feeling empowered. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the warm and wise Rosie Collins.
Rosie, we have so much to cover in your career, but the last line of your email made me laugh. You said, brain fog is fucked. What's the cure? And I felt very seen by that. I sort of jostle between how much to talk about it too, because the feminist in me doesn't want to bring it up in case it makes mums look like they're forgetful and not good hires, which you and I both know isn't true. So what I want to know is how brain fog has come up in your life, and how you feel about talking about it when it comes to that feminist piece of, no, I don't want to devalue myself because I'm amazing. But also, my brain might be a little foggy.
Yeah, it is my biggest challenge at the moment. And I feel quite conscious about it because for me, it's, you know, I feel like it's quite drastic to, you know, before becoming a mum. So the way that it manifests for me at work is, you know, I am mid-conversation and I'm talking about something important and I just completely lose my train of thought, forget what I'm saying. And, you know, that's compounded by the sleep component. So if I've not had it, or I should say not me, if Scarlett's not had a good night's sleep and therefore I've not had a good night's sleep, we are super, super foggy. And what I'm finding is it typically happens when I'm providing context to, like, a side context to the story. So I'm trying to build a story out or trying to add an, oh, I do that side story. And then I always forget what my original point was. So now I'm just trying to just focus on saying the thing that I need to say with conviction, essentially. But I think from the feminist point, like, it is just part of what we are experiencing. And I'm quite open with my team and the people around me and my husband, if I'm having like these foggy moments, because they need to know that that's going on. And that's also how I'm feeling. And so, for example, last week, I went back into the studio and we had a full day of back-to-back meetings and Scarlett had a terrible night's sleep. So already at 6 a.m., you feel like you've had, you know, a full day working. And I did text some of the girls that I had meetings with just to say, I'm running on fumes. My sofa, you know, my battery's really, really low. And they kind of just text back and, you know, hyped me up. And then there were quite a few boogie moments that were happening in our meeting. So it's this weird thing, isn't it, where you can't remember whether you've said them or whether you're repeating yourselves. So that's the confusing part for me. So I constantly feel like I'm saying, have I said this or did I tell you this? It's either I've forgotten or I've repeated myself. But I feel really comfortable with my beautiful team to just, I guess, share whether I'm having these foggy days or not. But yeah, I mean, I got into a spiral of Google the other day and, you know, the conclusion is I need to go and see a naturopath or someone. Apparently you come out of it.
Yes.
I need to come out of it. But it's a bit scary for me, I think, but, you know, it's part of the puzzle. So
it's good that you're normalizing it because really that's the only way through it. My best moment was voice memoing a friend and halfway through I just paused and was like, I can't remember what I was talking about. Yeah. So I am right there with you, which can be a bit of a reckoning with identity if you've been quite a high achiever, which you have by the looks of things. So I want you to take it back for me. You leave school or leave uni. What's next for you career-wise?
So I went to Bournemouth University, which is an advertising school. My whole career has been in advertising and marketing. And I was lucky enough to be chosen with a few others to get like an interview at a global media agency in London, which fortunately I got the job. The actual job I got wasn't particularly for me. It was very numbers focused. But even so, the actual getting into the industry, I feel was, such a blessing from my university days. And then pretty much until I started my business, I just grew within the advertising and media industries. So I started in London, did that for a couple of years, moved over to Australia, and just unknowingly, because the UK was much more advanced when it comes to that industry, without really having to do much, I kind of was positioned at a different level in Australia. And in Australia, what you have to do is you have to do the implementation of the media. And for, I guess, any listeners, think about it as you're watching maps and a TV ad pops up and it resonates with you. That means that you have a good media buying agency who have placed that advert in the right TV show for you. So that's just one aspect. But in Australia, you have to do that implementation of buying before you can move into a more strategic management role. I completely just missed that side, which was my preference and great. But then, you know, I just always think that's quite funny as it's meant to be a requirement of the industry, but I did just miss that. And then I just worked always at global agencies and worked on some national and global brands, managing their advertising essentially to, you know, deliver them a better ROI. So, and it was such an exciting industry to be a part of. Very, very full on. You meet a lot of people. There's a lot of social things. And as someone who was, you know, very, very young when they started their career, I moved to London when I was like 20 after uni. It was great. But as life goes on and you get older and you start to get a few more aches and pains, that pace of life for me was just starting to take its toll, especially when you then decide, you know, at the age of 33 that you're going to start your own business. So it just kind of crescendoed into just such an intense time of my life.
Yeah. So then let's talk starting your business. You were working full time at the time?
Yeah. Working full time. And Dej, my firstborn, as I say, just was an idea that really did come to me when I was on holiday one day, just kind of relaxing, you know, kind of just had this idea. But it stemmed from two things. The first is that I'm an extremely sentimental person. And actually, I probably should explain what Dej is.
Yes.
So Dej Amar is a personalized jewelry brand, or as I like to say, we specialize in memory making. So whether there's a person or a moment in your life that you want to capture, we engrave, whether it's fingerprints, you know, your newborn baby or your child or a loved one, could be your sister, could be your best friend, so that you, you know, you've always got them with you. It could be, you know, an old letter from your grandma who's no longer here and you want her handwriting beautifully.
Oh, wow. Written, or some handwriting. Yeah. That's so special.
Or we also do paw prints of furry friends, you know. We don't discriminate on with your child. So that's what Dej is. And it came from the fact that, you know, I'm a super sentimental person. I've still got that box of, you know, cut out things or things that are super sentimental to me underneath my bed, photos, things from years and years ago, like old lips, like just random stuff. And then the other side is a lot of my girlfriends were having babies and we were going to all these baby showers. I knew absolutely nothing about babies at this point. And there were other girls in the group that had babies, which then meant that a lot of the gift giving for the baby had been done. And I was just a bit overwhelmed on what my gift was meant to be. So I just had the idea of, why don't we give mum something, you know? And now that I have had Scarlett and I have had my own baby shower, there is so much excitement about the baby. And I get that. Like, I was as well excited for her to arrive. But there is this point where, what do we give mum? And she's going all this at the same time. You know, she deserves a medal. So it might as well be a nice gold medal around her neck with something, you know, super special for her. So that's how Dej originated. And we celebrate all types of love. Like, it really can be, you know, the love of, like I said, your newborn, your best friend, like anything. Think about this as just like the foundation, just a piece of jewelry, but you're the person who designs your jewelry. Every single piece is completely unique to whatever story you want to tell.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you had a pretty good idea of product and how to sell from your backdrop, or your background rather.
Yeah.
But you learned everything yourself. You did it all yourself from our emails. I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the biggest lessons you learned early on? Because even just with selling guides online, we have resources that we sell. And even just with having a podcast, you realize how hard it really is to do everything yourself.
Yeah. I mean, look, it was chaotic. And like I said, it was probably the hardest year I've ever had. And, you know, I owe a lot to my career previously and the industry I was in, because what it made me realize was, you know, I needed a quality product, and therefore I had to go and find a supplier that would deliver that for me. I knew that customer service was going to be key to a personalized product. So I learned that, and I'll go into the detail of that in a second. And then speed to market as well. So making sure that people would be receiving, or their fingerprint kits would be delivered within a certain amount of time. And the greatest thing, but also one of the most stressful things about last role that I did before doing Daish full time, was I had a team of 20, roughly around 20, and I was doing all the P&Ls. But that was just an amazing, amazing skill to learn and be in charge of, you know, millions of dollars of media budget, because then I was able to put this into practice for my own business. And that's not to say that when I launched Daish, it was great. If anything, I would say it was a terrible launch. I built the website by myself, and I had one product, which was this one, which was just the gold necklace. We now have multiple different range of high precious metals, from silver all the way through to 40 karat gold, bracelets, rings, gemstones, you name it. But I remember it being live, and I just was like, cool, because the website's live, it's live, off we go. So, you know, I think for me, I do always say, if your product is polished, then it's too late to launch.
That's a great little nugget.
It is. And it was terrible. And I think as well, like, for me, I kind of contradict myself a little bit, because it has gone on to be my full-time job career. And, you know, I'm so proud of where it is now. But at the time, in my head, it was just going to be this small side hustle. But in order for it to be a side hustle, I had to produce a website. I had to have photos taken. Then all of a sudden, you want to do it to the best of your ability with the time that you have. So then you're like, oh, I actually need to get some sales to make it happen. But yeah, in regards to learning, I did it by myself, which, as a millennial, how we learn everything is we go to school, we read books, we put things into practice, whereas now the Gen Zs of the world would just go on Google and watch a few how-to tutorials and work out how to do stuff. And that's essentially what I had to do. And there is a plethora of information on Google, and especially in the e-commerce world, you have, you know, amazing e-commerce platforms like Shopify, where everything on how you can do stuff is there. You know, how to start your own podcast. There is already a lot of information out there for you to have a good understanding. And then you just got to start doing it and seeing what works and tweaking and optimizing. But yeah, I mean, the jewelry part was, I loved it. And I love that I have learned everything about the business before it's got to the point where I then had to employ someone to then do that specific part. I remember I had to, like, we were handwriting all the labels for the addresses. And obviously now, like, we print the labels, but just those really small things. And it got to the point where I think it was the first 4 months or something, I probably did like 100 sales. So it wasn't one of those things where I'd, you know, done a big pre-launch and it just went gangbusters from the get-go. It was one of those, let's just set it live, see what happens. I've got this big job where, you know, yes, your contract says you work 9 to 5, but really it's a 12-hour, you know, a daily job. So it was very, very intense. And then Mother's Day came around, which, you know, of course, men, or, you know, whoever it is, it could be a gift for yourself. You want to have something special for your first Mother's Day. And we did through like 300, I think it was just me. You know, when you kind of not wanting to take that full ownership.
Isn't that funny? I used to do that with Renata before I had Loz involved, and I'd say, wait, and you think, why? Like, give yourself the credit.
Yeah. Anyways, I did 350 orders in 1 month from doing, and it was just chaotic. And it was at that point, when I'd only launched 4 months before, I would have to make that decision of, and also it was so fulfilling and so rewarding. There were people who were sending me messages saying, you know, thank you so much. Like, I haven't, you know, this is what I've been looking for. I'm now able to have this person or this special moment with me forever. And that's enough, right? Yeah. To know that you are helping people and that you're giving them something that means so much to them. So,
when does jumping ship on your corporate role happen? Talk us through, I guess, the thoughts leading up to it, when you made the decision. And I'm also really interested to know if the concept, idea, or future planning of motherhood had any part in all of this, because a lot of the time it doesn't, and a lot of the time it does, and it's sort of a future planning thing of finding your own rhythm.
Yeah. I mean, it was either going to go one way or the other in terms of failure or success, but there was absolutely no way on my book that it was ever going to be a failure. So for me, I say launch. I set Dej live in January, and by August, I had resigned from my job, and I had a 3-month notice period because of the position that I was in. And to be honest, it was one of those things when it was becoming just too much within the hours of the day for me to do both. So that was a large contributing factor. I had to hire someone whilst I went to work to be in my spare bedroom and engrave the jewelry. And then I get home and it'd be like, there's like this engraving fairy who'd been there all day.
Wow. Amazing.
But the decision from, like, I've always said that I wanted to have a life by design. And that sounds a bit cheesy, but it's completely possible and it has been possible. So that the level of motherhood and having your family and having things on your terms definitely came into consideration. I'd never really seen or, you know, even dipped my toe in a world like that though. And everyone who I surrounded myself with, a few of my friends had businesses, but I hadn't seen, I guess, that really play out. And all my friends were still in the advertising world that I had lived in. So it was a door that I was desperately wanting to open, but I hadn't really seen into it. And being able to go from no control to be fully in control was, transformational.
And so you quit your day job or your corporate job. You're working full time in Deja Mark. When does the idea of pregnancy actually become something that's actualized and that you're really working towards?
Yeah. So I went full time on Dej. I hadn't met my now husband at the time. I was 33 and a half, I think. The half's important when I met him. And, you know, when you meet the person you're going to marry, you have those conversations pretty quickly because you know that this is your person and age kind of comes up. And, you know, I didn't have Scarlett until I was 37. And I'm fortunate that within a 6-month period of trying to fall pregnant, you know, we did. So, but that's not to say that we went through the fertility checklist fundamentals with a fertility specialist to make sure that, you know, we were both good, essentially. But motherhood, you know, it was a non-negotiable. It was always going to happen in my life. It wasn't one of those things where I was doing a career first in order to become a mother or like wait. It was just, I haven't met my person yet. And when we did, it kind of happened pretty quickly. So we got engaged within 18, 20 months and had Scarlett 2.5 years into our relationship, maybe 3. And then we just got married last month and haven't been together for 4 years yet. So it's been a busy time launching, having a baby, getting married.
All of the things. The sad thing about where society places women is that often someone that's single at 33 might feel sad about that if they're a woman who wants babies, because all of a sudden this happens, pressure feels like it's mounting, which is unfortunate that it feels that way when so many people find different joys at different phases of life. How did you feel at that time before you had met your partner when motherhood was always on the drawing board for you?
It's a tough one because in hindsight, you can, you know, everything's worked out, but in that moment, it is scary. And unfortunately, the conversations that you have with these fertility specialists, they really scare you. And whilst I, you know, have a positive, this is where I kind of want to be quite careful, because I personally was quite surprised that it didn't take us very long at all, because all the conversations that I had with this particular fertility specialist was, she was providing the stats and the stats don't look good. And then you know, there are people that you know who do struggle and do take a really long time to fall pregnant, even at a younger age than myself. So I guess I can only provide my experience, which was, yeah, it's pretty daunting. But I think I'm a pretty positive person and that I knew it was going to happen. Like there was, I could see it and I wasn't, you know, and I met my husband when I wasn't planning or wanting to meet anyone, which is a funny story in itself. And when we, you know, it was in our wedding speeches about just how much I was not in the mood to meet anyone at the point that I met him. And that kind of the beauty of it, I wasn't at. But yeah, I guess I just want to be careful around that conversation because I do feel really lucky to have met him and, you know, fall pregnant very, you know, within a 6-month period at that age that I was. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great mindset to have because I guess it flies in the face of what we're told of. As you say, it's not that everyone is going to be able to easily fall pregnant at 37, but I guess what I'm getting at is that this idea that being single in your mid or early 30s is this sad thing because it's just not, as you've just shown us.
No. And do you know what? Sorry to interrupt you. We had Scarlett at the Royal Hospital for Women in Randwick. And I, you know, the stat there in terms of like the average age, what would you think the average age of, you know, a mother giving birth would be?
Oh, I'm going to guess. Okay. I love this. No one's actually ever done this to me. I love it.
Love a big question as we go.
I'll stick to what I would like. Now I'm thinking that maybe it's later. I'm not sure. I'm going to say 31.
Okay. It's 35.
Yes. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I have to say this is a conversation I have with someone versus directly from. So I just, that's my source.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we need to normalize that because yeah, there can be so much pressure on women in that 30 to 35 bracket to find your person and have a baby because your window's narrowing. But there's so many different journeys. So I'm really glad that you highlighted yours.
So many different journeys. And some people, you know, may do it by themselves because they know that they, you know, want to have a baby. They haven't found that person and they make that decision as well. Like, you know, I'm wanting to have a second or a third child, but I'm definitely, you're potentially going to have to be doing that potentially in my 40s. So, and it's a hard thing to navigate, but for me, a positive mindset is what we every time.
Yeah. And so I want to take you back to being pregnant. You're a business owner. Your business is, I'm thinking, really starting to flourish. How did you feel about stepping away from this thing you created? Was it this control what you can control thing and you had a good team around you, or was that a pretty hard thing to let go of?
A bit of both. So I felt like I approached it quite strategically. And I think, you know, knowing that the juggle is real, regardless of whether you're running your own business or just, you know, we have a certain number of hours in the day and shit needs to get done. And then when you throw pregnancy and a baby into that, then you've
got much room left, is there?
Yeah. The balls are balling. So for me, what I did, and this is, I got this amazing piece of advice from my wedding dress designer of all people. And she said to me, make sure you leave your business, as in physically leave your business before you need to. So Scarlett was due in January. She's like, leave the business 2 months before. And I was like, that's such good advice because she and so many other people who run their own business do have to go back earlier because you're just busy getting everything done. And then the team might not have necessarily had the time to adjust without you. So I made the decision, I think it was in September, to only go in twice a week. And it just meant that for the other 3 days that the team had to adjust to me not being there because you're physically in the same space.
Yeah.
It's very easy to be like, hey, what would you do? Like if your customer said this, or hey, can you just check this thing? And because I wasn't there, they needed to answer those questions themselves, which they're obviously more capable of doing. But that was really, really good. And I love that piece of advice and I talk about it often. And I think that worked really well. We had Christmas. So Christmas is a huge time where it's like 40% of our sales are done. And
oh, wow.
I still remained like just 2 days a week and we hired everyone in appropriately. But the team did really, really well there from a business perspective. And I think the other juggle for me is that I, you know, wasn't really used to, it's the control thing of allowing them, of like not knowing what's happening and stuff. But what that did allow me to do was like the mental preparation. for the birth. So I feel like, yeah, I really equipped myself. And I talk about now, even with the juggle after Scarlett, I talk about the toolkit. And I had a toolkit beforehand and I had a toolkit after. So the toolkit for me, I guess, before she came along was like, I really tried to educate myself on the birth, which, you know, we all kind of do. Listening to podcasts, there was this fantastic book that I was given to, which is called Hypnobirthing by Sophie Fletcher. I was so petrified about doing it, which every woman is because she's never done it before. And this book was amazing at making me change my frame of mind into knowing what my body was able to do. And then I also, as an expat, don't have any family around. So I really tried to build a community of pregnant women around me because none of my friends were pregnant. And I know some people who have had quite, you know, bad maternity leave experiences and felt really lonely because if they didn't connect with anyone in their mother's group, then they were by themselves. So I joined the Peanut app, which is basically Tinder for mom. And you try and find new mom friends and amazingly found like there's a group of us now. And then we've actually joined their mother's group. So we're all kind of, and it's been amazing. You're able to have those nitty gritty pointy conversations. So that was kind of the pre-work and that meant, you know, the decision to leave the business and allow the team to grow. I should also say, sorry, I forgot to say this. It's pretty key. I actually hired two people before I fell pregnant in anticipation that it was going to happen to alleviate any of those day-to-day tasks that I was doing. Yeah. So it left me, you know, the content and marketing. So I hired someone for that. And then the production management. So someone to look after the entire studio and the team or jewelers that were producing the jewelry. Yeah. So that was amazing. It meant that my role didn't necessarily, it was just commercial only. Yeah. So that was pretty key. So those two things from work and a personal perspective just meant that I mentally felt prepared to allow work to do its thing.
Step out and step into motherhood. Speaking of, that's the perfect segue. Meet baby Scarlett. What do you recall most from those early days of motherhood?
Well, I mean, she decided to arrive 3 weeks early.
Luckily, you stepped away early.
Yeah. So this was the funny thing. I finished on the Friday, had my baby shower on the Saturday. And then on Monday, it was like lying on the sofa and there we go. I won't go into the details, but it was just hilarious because my husband's a very organized person and we hadn't, you know, nothing was planned. We didn't have the baby capsule and it was just go, go, go. So that's still like a funny story. And I was in labor and I was paying the team because in my head, I'm like, right, I'm definitely not going to be able to do this on Friday. So if I just quickly do it now. And we were meant to have our Christmas, like end of year party on the Friday. So I was trying to organize that as well. Anyway, very, very funny. And that's kind of all I remember. It didn't go as you thought. But again, I've been reading the beautiful Sophie Fletcher book. So I felt mentally prepared of the different avenues of how it could go. And I really, you know, loved our, I guess, story in the end because, yeah, I won't go into it, but it wasn't how I expected it to go. But and no birth story will ever be the same. And I know that the next ones that we have will definitely not. And here we go. I've done my brain fog where I've kind of forgotten your question.
No, that's all part of it. And we need to normalize it. I want to take you next to something you said in our email chain about reading something that Michelle Battersby put up made you realize that you didn't really have a maternity leave. Can you talk us through the more practical side of what time you took off and how you eased back in and then also how you felt about that emotionally and all of those things?
Yeah. So, and I'm really grateful, I guess, for Michelle and other people who have been very open from, you know, day dot of their little ones coming into the world. So for me, Scott, I made the decision that I wasn't going to go physically back into the studio at all until September of this year. So that was the plan. We had a few things in place where the team would actually come to my house, or the production manager, Steph, would come to my house and we would have our meetings there. And you know, she's a mum, she gets it. It was really special. And she wanted me equally to have that time. And she is just a force of nature where she would have just handled anything within the studio. The team, if something was happening, she's got it covered. So I felt very supported in that way. So yeah, in terms of like a literal sense, for me, I wanted this experience of the maternity leave, even if it was from my own business. And I'd done all that prep to get there. But in reality, I was still working, whether it was, you know, payroll, commercials, emergency things do come up. There was a project that was meant to be done at the end of the year. I produced this personalized production platform with some developers, and that didn't finish until March. Again, Scarlett was born in January. So I was working on that when I needed to. But yeah, so what Michelle said is, and I was, you know, I was paying attention to what she was saying and listening to her story of Alfie. And she was like, I'm not taking any maternity leave off. And I was like, oh my gosh, like she's going to go straight back to work. And she practically said, I'm taking 4 weeks off and then I'm going back one day a week. And I was like, well, this isn't too dissimilar to what I've done. But yet in my eyes, I've taken maternity leave. Yeah. And I kept listening to her. And I think she's gone back more than that now. But everything that she was saying, I was like, well, that's what I've done. Yeah. But so why am I thinking that I'm on maternity leave? And essentially, it just comes down to I have always, you know, just because you have this certain amount of hours in the day doesn't mean that they need to be filmed with work. Even if you're working one day, 1 hour of that, you've worked today.
Yeah.
And I have probably previously just thought, okay, well, if I'm not working 5 days a week, then I'm on maternity leave. And we made the decision, Stefan and I, very early that we would have a nanny 3 hours, 3 days a week so that I could just get some of these commercial things done, like tied up and stuff like that. And then it was funny. I remember we always had our mother's group on a Tuesday. So I do 3 hours in the morning. Then I go to mother's group and I would, you know, in my head, I'm thinking that I'm on maternity leave. And so it's just this weird, I guess, blur where I was working and then also enjoying those things that mothers who wouldn't be working at all experience. So yeah, it was a weird one for me. And that hasn't been until recently where I kind of have realized that I just did continue to work. It just wasn't 5 days. It may have been an hour or two, one day. It could have been 1 day a week. And that sounds really obvious when I share it out loud. But for me, because the majority of time was spent with Scarlett versus working, in my head, it's skewed to leave.
Yeah. And what's the balance now? Is the nanny still at play or are you working more or how are you navigating it all now?
Yes. Like I said, I have this mental toolkit and then a physical toolkit because the juggle is happening, whether we like it or not. We have a beautiful nanny who does 3 days a week and looks after Scarlett all day. So I work from home two of those days, and then one day I'm in the studio. And what is great about still removing myself physically from the studio is that the team they're firing and they're doing so well that it's enabled me to be better at business because the things that I'm working on are elevated. They're elevated, but then what I'm also working on is better for the future of the business as well.
Is it almost like that adage of working on the business instead of in the business? Did it allow you that?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And I think one of the challenges though actually has been, I don't know about yourself, but I always feel like I, before becoming a mum, felt like I could be doing a few things at once.
Oh yeah, that's very much me.
Right? Like you've got, I always think about it as like the stove. There's like four hobs on, right? I could turn, might not all be playing at the same time, but all the hobs could be on. And I'd be fine just to be like, yep, cool. Do something, come back to it. Right. A bit chaotic, but you get it done. Whereas now, as soon as one of those things is mumming and looking after Scarlett, the others just don't work and they become blurry. So these things before, which probably were all layered on top of each other, now I have to block all this time. So that's been a great thing in my toolkit, which is, if I think about it practically, so Monday, Tuesday, I am looking after her and I only look after her.
And so you actually shut off from work totally?
Yeah.
Wow. How do you do that? What are your
brain,
secrets?
Don't get me wrong, my brain might be thinking of things, but my attention is on Scarlett. And this new nanny is so amazing. And she's so amazing with Scarlett and so present with her that me witnessing that has then actually weirdly like made me better with her as well.
Oh,
and
wow. What a beautiful learning.
Yeah. She's so lovely. And so me being able to, you know, keep that momentum going for Scarlett to make sure that she has these beautiful, fun days versus someone who is on their laptop, on their phone. And don't get me wrong, God, I'm going to do my side thing and forget what we're talking about. So please bring me back. Bring me back. Is in the beginning when she's sleeping a lot and, you know, I could get a lot of work done. She would be sleeping in my arms or in the carrier and I would be able to smash out quite a few hours of work. That's not the stage where we're at now. So I need to, it's important to note that this toolkit and how I've been able to navigate both has changed. And she's only 8 months old, but it has changed. But this is where we're at now. So yes, Monday, Tuesday, I give her my full attention. My out of office is funny. I basically am saying, you know, as the founder, I'm always thinking about work. But these 2 days, I'm being really present with Scarlett. So I'll get back to you once I'm no longer worrying about nap time and food and toys. And then Wednesday to Friday, I know that she's being beautifully cared for and I'm fully, fully, fully invested in work. And what's great about Monday and Tuesday, if I think of anything, I just add it to my
That's what
list.
I was going to ask. So do you write it down or I want to know like exactly what you do?
I have an app on my phone called To-Do, which is Microsoft To-Do. And I just jot it down. And it's a bit, you know, like when you listen to the meditation apps and it's like, just park that thought, just come to yourself. Yes. You're like, I can never do that. But honestly, I do. I just add it to this list.
Yeah.
And then I tackle everything. And because I'm not going back into the studio, I'm only doing that once a week, I'm able to get so much shit done.
Yes.
I just sit at that desk and
work. Do you work on the Monday, Tuesday when Scarlett's napping? I want to know next. Or you don't even do that?
Oh, God, I haven't. But some her naps are so inconsistent. If we want to 2 hours about sleep, I can do that. That too. But no, I don't. And this is, again, it's going back to these blocks. Because if I start layering stuff, it starts to scramble. I start to feel really unorganized. And I'm not saying I'm a super organized person. I'm not saying that. But this is state of the last couple of months where in those, when she's napping, I will either make her some food for like the rest of the week. And I really, you know, I might do some housework, but none of that stuff is getting done Wednesday to Friday. I have two brains. I have my mum brain and my business brain, and they do not work. Same time. Speaking of naps, she's just woken up. They do not collide together. Like I just start to, you know, if you hear your baby or you see your baby, hear baby crying, see your baby in the corner, and you're trying to do something not related to her, starts to get a bit fuzzy for me.
Yeah. I'm interested to know if you didn't step back from work in the lead up to maternity leave, do you think you'd be able to have these really good boundaries on Mondays and Tuesdays? Or do you think that enabled you to learn what your team were capable of before Scarlett came to be? And so it enabled you to set better rules around it, maybe?
I think it's a bit of that, but also that desire to have that life by design as well. Yeah. And going back to that year where I was trying to do Dej and my full-time job, the reason why it was so difficult and more difficult than this first year of motherhood is because I wasn't in control.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a job, it is super intense. You have clients, you have to be reactive, whereas I'm in control of that. So, and also I want those hours and those days with her. So I do feel like I now have a perfect mix. And equally, the team is so capable. They're so amazing.
I'm sure it doesn't always look as neat as it sounds, which you've acknowledged, but I feel like you do have some really good boundaries. And a lot of the time, that's the hardest thing about being a mum in business. I want to know, what is the piece of advice you would give to other, say you had someone pregnant that runs their own show, what are the key things that you'd say to them before they do embark on motherhood?
I feel like I may be repeating myself, but that advice that I got, which was leave the business before you can, I've shared that so much with people because, and that doesn't, you know, you've got to put things in place to be able to do that. So for me, I hired two people and that then obviously means that you're spending more money on resources, but that just then has made my life and this year so much better. So if people are in a position where they can take a hit on that bottom line to therefore then make their life easier to be able to have this special maternity leave, that would be my advice. And then as general advice is just to give yourself some grace because there's, you know, and I think it's easy to do in hindsight because there's definitely been times where, you know, you're stuck. There was, you know, you're breastfeeding, you're on the call to like random developers, you know, and it's all a bit chaotic. And you just have to say, this is where my life's at the moment. And, you know, hopefully you've got those good relationships where you can. But yeah, I think leaving the business before you can, hiring new people, essentially giving yourself time.
Yeah.
Time is our most precious commodity. And if you, there's only a certain amount of it. And by adding a new full-time job, which is looking after a baby, if you haven't released some time, for me, the juggle was always going to be really difficult. So I released time with Dej to then make sure that Scarlett, I guess, could have that time.
And we've spoken a little bit about still having to show up to work if you're feeling foggy or you're feeling tired or all of those things. What do you do to sort of dust yourself off if you've had a bad night's sleep and you have to go into the studio that day and that just happens to be the worst night of sleep that happened that week? How do you sort of dust yourself off and get yourself feeling good about a work day?
Oh, God, there's so many things. Literally 5 coffees to start with. Maybe 3, maximum 3. Going for a walk, getting some light and sun on your face. I know this sounds really obvious, but these
things, the fresh air thing, I'm really focusing on that.
Yeah, they have such a positive effect on me. I can just like walk down like to the local beach with the pram, with Scarlett, with a cup of coffee, and I just instantly feel better. The other thing is, you know, we have our WhatsApp group with the Peanut Girls and, you know, we talk about how fucked the night was and, you know, they're like, you've got this. And yeah, so I've always said the walk. Yeah, I think, and music, podcasts as well, like listening to some inspirational shit.
That's a good one. I find that's really helpful too if you haven't seen a friend or had that much contact with a friend that day, whether it's illness or you're just a bit tired and can't really be bothered. I find that podcast or music thing, it's almost like the adult that you need interaction with when you can't get it. So I really love that tip.
Yeah. I need to get out of the house regardless. I get cabin fever. So does she. She's inherited that from me. Like, we just need to do something. It's that funny me where like the baristas asking, oh, what's your plans today? And you say, well, this is
my plan. Yeah, this is my big plan. What are you talking about?
But it does just make me feel better. I can't just sit inside all day. So yeah, again, the toolkit, like they're the small things that help me.
I feel like you've given such practical advice on this episode that a lot of people are going to take so much from. Before I let you go, and if you could go back and give that pregnant version of yourself one piece of advice on navigating business owning and motherhood, what would it be?
I think it would be, again, this is practical because this is what's helped me, is just to keep building that toolkit. Yeah. I feel like I equipped myself before, during pregnancy, from someone who was so scared to then feeling really empowered. And that was through, a lot of mental prep, education, just constantly listening to stuff, reading stuff. And that was that one that was ticked. And then now I guess I'm doing it with the business as well. Yeah. So because you assume it's going to be a bit fucked, you assume the juggle is going to be really hard. I am trying to build my resilience and toolkit to ensure that that juggle, which inevitably is going to happen, is as manageable as possible.
It's almost like you prepare for shit hitting the fan rather than waiting for it to happen.
Yeah. Versus just like, I was so scared that I don't want to get back into that place of that year.
Yes.
Full-time work and Dej. It was so awful that it's just, I scarred myself. And now I'm in control. It's how do I have that toolkit to, yeah, just prepare myself as much as possible without knowing what that thing is going to actually eventuate in being. So
this has been so enlightening because I've actually learned really practical tips that I can take away into my life. So thank you so much for sharing your story and your advice. If people want to find Deja Mark online, where should they go?
So go to our Instagram page, which is Deja Mark, or our website, which is dejamark.com.
Thank you so much for being here.
Amazing. Thanks, Lucinda.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.